lunge.
Oh, that was really satisfying to watch. John just... So everybody can understand what happened. John just put the plunger down on a percolator. Is that what things called?
Plunge. I'm sure it has
A coffee jar.
Yeah, I always call them coffee pots.
Coffee pot. That's it. It's a coffee pot.
Coffee pot.
Yeah, yeah. But when you just hear someone say plunge and someone else say, ooh, that was real good to watch.
David, I didn't say plunge. I said plunge. Just far more satisfying.
Yeah. Like, we normally like to do a little bit of a ramble at the start of the podcast here, but like, what's happened in the last 2 weeks?
Wait, like political stuff?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's been a lot of political stuff, I guess. I was thinking more gaming related.
There's like two games?
Yeah.
Are there two games?
Oh, here's something that political that we can talk about. Let's just let refugees into our country, hey? How about we do that?
A statement is from David, and potentially from the podcast, but not specifically from me.
That is, yeah. David says... We should let more refugees in. That's what David says. And if you don't like it, David doesn't care about what you think.
That's fair, David. Yeah. I guess. We're all entitled to our opinion as citizens of this great nation.
Yep, we are.
Maybe one day I'll explain why I'm so weird. Maybe.
No, the about page has already done it for you, man. Oh. We all know that you're a secret agent.
Ba-dum, ba-dum,
ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum, to James Bond.
Podcast has just been removed from iTunes. Just like copyright infringement, bam.
Yeah, I mean, if you sing it, that's a cover, right? Is that allowed? I don't know how this works.
That's
less than 15 seconds, I think, is okay.
That's what our lawyers will be arguing. Clearly, this was not meant
if someone sends us a cease and desist, I'll replace it with something. But like, there was a YouTube video of somebody who uploaded a video of like... I don't know, some Nintendo game.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was like the first level of Super Mario Bros. And they got hit with a content strike because of the music.
Yeah.
And so they uploaded the exact same video with them just mouthing all the sound effects of like the coins and stuff. So.
Bing, bing, bing.
Ba-da-ding, diggle, 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 diggle. All stuff like that. It was very funny. And I presume that that means we'll be okay. Because I'm not a lawyer. I judge all of my decisions based on kind of what I pick up from YouTube.
Yeah, which is not law. Except for when you listen to like YouTube videos about law.
Yeah.
In which case, it is definitely not legal advice.
Well, yeah, like, so what the law says about, like, you know, the Constitution, right, is like, I don't trust InfoWars about that any more than I trust the fucking president.
Which, again, is your opinion.
Yeah. It's my opinion. Donald Trump is a bad person.
Oh, that's definitely going to get cut.
I think it's good to weed out the neo-Nazi following now rather than when we have...
It would be super weird if I always find it's weird when someone's like... We're all, like, lefties here. I don't know why you Nazis follow us.
Yeah, like, I want to have a few people saying, had to unfollow, can't believe you brought politics in. I just want people to be accustomed to the fact that we're going to talk about that every now and then. And I don't want to get to a point where we have, like, 10,000... Like, this will almost never happen. But if we ever get, like, 10,000 listeners, and then we have to decide, okay, do we talk about this political thing or risk losing 20% of our audience? I'd rather just never have them, so I never have to worry about that.
Exactly. Then you don't lose anybody.
Yeah.
Because the terrible people weren't even there. But, like, there's always the argument to say that maybe we could just, you know, if they're there and then if they give us money, then we can take their money and we can spend it on flowers and rainbows.
Yeah.
And all the other things liberals buy. I've got a...
You know, we can buy safe spaces and...
Yeah. I've got a shipment of hugs and goodwill coming. And Facebook likes. Truckloads of Facebook likes. Just disembodied thumbs in a barrel.
Yeah. No, we can spend all of our ill-gotten blood money on nice things.
All of the things.
Legalize weed, by the way. That's another one of David's political opinions. Legalize marijuana. Spend more money on health programs for people who have alcohol dependencies.
Again, I'm going to reiterate, I'm not making any political opinions, you know, expressing anything.
Every political opinion you hear on this podcast is one of David's, even if it comes out of John's mouth.
Probably until about June, and then we'll see.
That was very funny. We'll see how funny it is in June, but that was very funny to hear right now.
Ooh, you're going to have to stay tuned, listeners, to figure out why can't John say anything? I mean, if you've got half a brain, you'll figure it out, but
yeah,
I won't tell. Ooh, I'm winking.
Yeah, yeah, he was winking there. But we should probably stop talking about dangerous political opinions as they relate to your ability to speak about them and... What we're actually here to talk about.
Yeah, we're here today to talk about...
Doom.
Yeah, Doom. No, I know. I lost all my momentum because I forgot how we start the show.
We've already spoken a little bit about the Doom facing the planet Earth after recent political upheavals in North America.
Did we? Or did you?
I did. I am the audience we. Okay, the royal we.
I'm going to stop now. Yes. Yes, we did. Doom.
But we're here to actually talk about a more compartmentalized form of Doom, which is Doom, the 2016 video game that came from id Software and published by Bethesda.
Bethesda
published this game, right?
That's
you
weird.
Forget that they're a publishing company sometimes.
Yes, 1,000 times. Wait, yeah. Is Obsidian the one who makes the games?
Don't know. I don't know a lot about Fallout, okay? I don't know a lot about...
We're very knowledgeable here on the Slowpoke Podcast.
But I do know that this was made by id Software and published by Bethesda, and this is probably the youngest game that we've tackled on Slowpokes.
Which, a mere child.
Made 2016.
Yes.
Which is it. Not even that... It's really not that long ago. Like
less than a year, I guess.
Less than... It's like, that's really not very old, but it feels like so long ago because of how quickly things move. Yes. Premise of the podcast. On that note... Welcome to the Slowpokes, everyone. I'm David, your Slowpoke number two.
And I'm John, Slowpoke number one. See, now I feel like we've started.
Yeah, this is the real stuff.
That
this
was
is
what I was waiting for. Good Lord.
Okay, Doom, we're covering.
Yeah. Doom. Oh, Doom. Such a game.
Doom is an interesting game because it's Doom, right? That sounds stupid, but
no, it's like you're saying...
Doom has a heritage,
it's
right?
It's like you're saying it's Wolfenstein, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's what I mean. Like, Doom is interesting because it's... It's the one. Yeah, it is one of these...
Grandfather games.
Yeah, grandfather games, basically. The concept of the first-person shooter was invented by the original Doom. And a lot of people our age kind of forget that, because we're just younger than, like, that point. Most people, I think, that are our age have always had FPSs as a thing.
Our age being around 25 to 30.
Yeah, sort of in there.
Because no one would know.
Yeah, 25 to 30. But, like, I think it's really, really interesting to talk about a game like Doom that this particular version of Doom is so young, but the original Doom is a pioneer of gaming genre.
I would say that Wolfenstein, for me, was the one who invented, like, the first-person shooter, but Doom was the one that made it successful.
Yeah, I wouldn't really know. I'm not like up on history, and FPSs have never really been my main genre.
Yeah.
But it is interesting just to come to something that has that level of if not reverence, then historical significance.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if reverence is what
there
you would
are people
say.
who are really into Doom, dude.
Okay.
All right.
I should annoy them.
One of the other things that we normally do on the podcast is we try to break it up into a spoiler-free zone, but as I imagine a lot of you are probably aware, the plot of Doom is not really something you can spoil. I mean,
I can spoil it right now.
Oh, yeah? You have one? Spoiler warning, everyone.
Spoiler warning. The Doom Marine kills demons, and then they're dead. He gets the guns, and then he kills the demons.
And the guns are big.
Yeah.
And fucking, and guns.
And they're very big. And then they're dead. It's Doom.
Yeah, it's Doom. So
I can appreciate people like not wanting the specific spoiled, but we're just going to walk right through this field of daisies.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the plot pretty openly. I'll say this up front, there really is nothing to spoil. What you expect from the game's plot is going to be pretty much what you see. As far as... plot details are concerned. The quality of the plot is something we'll talk about very, very differently from that.
Yeah.
We also like to talk about our expectations before we start. This is a retrospective. And neither of us had played this before playing it for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, why don't you tell our beloved listeners
what you
were kind of expecting walking into this.
That's the dumbest thing to say. I'm going to just say, anyway, get out of the way. I expected this Doom game to be like Doom. What a useless sentence to say. Listeners, I'm sorry. I'll give your money back.
Yeah.
But I really honestly just expected moving around.
We won't actually give you your money back, by the way. I really need to say that. We're not giving anyone their money back.
We gave this away for free.
Yeah, this is free. I'm not giving you money for something that we're broadcasting for free.
See, it was like a joke.
Yeah.
Because they didn't pay any money, and now we're talking about it.
You've got to be real careful. Okay. There's going to be someone.
All right, okay. I'm sorry. That was a joke.
Yep.
David.
Thank you.
Now
I can rest easy.
So what I expected from this game was honestly for it to be just violent fun.
Yeah.
And kind of like, whereas some violent games, like I'm going to say the word hatred and a lot of people are going to know what I'm talking about.
Oh, the game Hatred.
The game Hatred.
The game titled Hatred.
Thank you, yes. And also the game Postal.
Yeah.
Those games, are also about violence, but it's very complex and kind of like...
Yeah, I think human? That there's interest... It's interesting. Like, my expectation of this particular Doom is you have those other games that are violent in a way that kind of makes you very uncomfortable thinking
it's
about
them.
It's
very personal violence.
Yeah, and, like, it's very much... And, like, you know, a game titled Hatred, like, the whole premise is that you're destroying people's faces and stuff because you hate them. That's my feeling from that. It's very, very unhealthy.
Yeah.
A game like Doom, though, is unapologetic in a different way. I feel like in a self-aware way. And that was what I was kind of going into this expecting, to be a lot more silly and not actually trying to capitalize on dark emotions in the player.
Yeah, you can get away with a lot when you're destroying the demons from hell.
Yeah.
Socially, I don't think
you can do a lot more to a zombie than you can do to a person before morality starts to become questioned.
And you can do a lot more to the devil than you can do to, like, a zombie. Like, it's like, this is the list. You got
the
people.
Font of all human suffering.
Yeah, who's really going to be like, whoa, that was a bit extreme, chainsawing that demon in half. I mean, it just spent all of eternity making souls endlessly suffer. So I just thought... The game was going to be, basically, you're just going to vindictively murder a whole bunch of demons. So and
I was expecting something relatively flat. That said, though, obviously, you and I are both fans of The Jimquisition, starring Gavin Dunn, Laura Dale, and Jim Sterling.
Yes. The Right Honourable.
Yeah, the Right Honourable. And they have talked about Doom before. And one thing that kind of came up in that is that there's a more characterization than you would expect in a game like this. And so it's difficult to phrase this in a way that doesn't sound like fucking stupid. I was expecting to go into this game and get more characterization than I was expecting, but I still got more than I was expecting, even expecting I would get more than I was expecting.
So you're expecting to get more than you were expecting, but you got more than you even expected.
Yes, exactly that.
Perfect.
So I was expecting it to have like 20% more of characterization than my first impression based on trailers, but I got like 80 to 100% more characterization than I was expecting. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it's very safe to say that on the whole, I actually really fucking liked Doom. How did you feel about it?
I had fun. Like, to say like I really liked it, I'm like, it was great. It's a good game.
Yeah.
Very solid game. Does what it does really well. We're going to explain like some of the nuances of that, obviously. I mean, let's close the show. 10 minutes, done. Bam.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really wonderful put together game. And to me, it's one of those examples of just like taking something old, making it new, and not adding any fat.
Yeah, right? Exactly. If you were going to like... If we ever get to the point where people are putting our fucking quotes on boxes, my quote for this
good
would be...
Good lord.
Yeah.
Doom, it's dick stomping good.
Fucking hell, John.
I'm sorry. You just said put things on a box, and I was like, what would I want to see on a box with my name?
I was going to say something serious.
I'm sorry.
Like, and, you know...
Please.
And, like, I'm never going to meet the quality of that. But no, my quote would basically be something like, Doom, they made a really good Doom.
Yeah.
You know, like, they did Doom good.
They did...
Well-doomed.
Well-doomed. Well-doomed indeed. 10 Doom points for Doom and Door.
Doom out of Doom. Well done. So yeah, why don't we actually start talking about the game generally? I mean, you were talking about how they rebooted, like sort of they made this game as a Doom game without any of the fat, right? And so I think it's not, I don't know if this is technically a reboot because there have been a fair few Dooms. Like Doom 3 came not as long ago as you would think. But I think it's safe to think about this in the same way that you do think about a reboot because they do exactly what you said. They figure out a way to point you at what Doom should be giving you, but without cloning any of the stuff that makes it feel really dated and out of place. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, totally.
Like, you've got the floating health pickups. You've got the, you know, however many guns you can carry.
It's 10 like 8 guns. So yeah,
8 to 10 guns. You know,
and
you
all the associated ammo.
Yeah, and you don't and reload any of the games, any of the guns. You've got a chainsaw. You've got the double jump.
The power-ups.
Yeah, you have power-ups. You have secrets, and they call them secrets. There's a lot about this game that's very, very reminiscent, like in the language and its presentation and its broad gameplay style, like, you know, the secret, you know, hidey holes and whatever. That actually is quite, I don't want to say nostalgic, but you know what I mean. It's a throwback, right?
Totally.
It is a throwback. But they don't bog this down with any of the shit. Like, this is the most ridiculous example I could pick because it's way too obvious. But for example, you look with the mouse, you know, if they were just trying to do a complete, like, carbon copy reboot of Doom, and you
Doom
didn't...
had the original Doom had tank controls. You would like you would turn and move forwards and backwards like some sort of weird mechanized human being.
Yeah, and like that was great and fun at the time, and obviously it would be fucking stupid of them to clone it, but like there's a lot of more nuanced examples and stuff like that. And so like the way that they've designed the levels, and for example, like Doom is like the platonic example of a corridor shooter in a lot of ways, whereas a lot of this game is outside. You know, just little things like that where like a lot of people be like, oh, to really be Doom, you've got to be in all of these complexes and stuff. But they don't hamstring themselves trying to be...
Yeah, one of the obvious things when you boot up the game is they really leverage the amount of detail and complexity that they can build into these levels.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The asymmetrical nature of them as well. Because especially with the older Doom games, things were flat surfaces.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the nature of the engine that you were building in. Mm. But in this Doom, you can have, like, this sounds so dumb. You have, like, slopes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the terrain can be rough.
And that, yeah, that is really interesting because, like, it would have been very easy to have most of this be internal complexes. And some of the games, some of the levels are. Obviously, it needs to have those internal complexes. But a lot of it is rough terrain and outside, and it's just very natural looking and slopey and stuff like that.
Oh, totally. I think that, like, the beauty as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's just something really, like, it's, like, lovingly detailed and very organic feeling kind of space.
Yeah,
like, the original Doom game was, there wasn't a lot around. It was just kind of these weirdly empty rooms that didn't seem to serve a purpose.
Mm.
And that's one of the things they've added. So, you know, it's the graphics have been just jacked right up and it's all detailed.
Yeah, fuck me, this is a good looking game.
Yeah. No, it's super well detailed and just gorgeous. You just look around and going, oh my God, all these disemboweled bodies look so so real and high def.
That is something that is interesting as well. Like, you have a lot, we've talked about this before with, like, you know, the games that are just browns, reds, grays, and like the color of blood.
Yep.
This game is surprising. It has a surprising breadth to its color palette for a Doom game.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that sounds stupid as well because the original Doom was quite colorful too, but like for a generic action game, I should say, it has a very good color palette and there's a lot of variation in what you see.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of range.
Yeah.
Totally. Whether it's like the white advanced science complexes or the grimy back of house industrial zones or standing on Mars.
Yeah, like just the aesthetics of all of that.
Yeah, and or
like,
even when you go to the snow, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, there's a fucking level in the fucking snow, isn't there?
Yeah.
I really love that stuff. Like the aesthetics in this, it struck me very, very early on. I forget where I read this, but in Wreck-It Ralph, right?
Yep.
You have that a huge chunk of that movie is set in the candy world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading this thing about how they actually brought in food photographers to consult on that because they needed the world to look fun and colorful, but not be like disgustingly off-putting, but also not be too appetizing, right? And so they've made this, and like when you watch that movie, you think back on it, it's like, yeah, actually there was no point where I felt like overwhelmed by how sticky the whole place would be. And I think about that a lot with the level design in Doom, right? So you start off in those industrial areas.
Because Doom would also be very sticky.
Yeah. I mean, there are parts of it would be very sticky, actually, now that you've said that. But I'm struck with, like, for example, the early part where you're on the industrial zones in Mars, and you've got all of the mining drill things, right? And so you're in this environment, and you know that it would be a horrible place to live, but playing the game in the moment isn't off-putting and unpleasant.
Yeah.
Like, you have the comprehension it's a harsh environment without being, like, emotionally deterred from engaging with the game. It's incredibly detailed design. I think that's a very, very hard line to walk, and I was very impressed by that early on with a lot of the early level design.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of games do leverage it for story purposes when they make something feel dirty or grimy or scary or all that kind of stuff, but Doom really kind of, you always feel a bit popped out of it. In, like, a good way?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say popped out of it. It's just, to me, it's like they've made the world unwelcoming without preventing the player from being welcome.
Yeah.
You know, it's a difficult thing to do because you're right. In some games, you have short sections that are very disturbing and very off-putting. If we're talking about another action game like Halo, Halo 3 in particular, there are sections of the game where you're in flood-infested areas, and that's very kind of, not body horror to the fullest extreme of it, but they do try and make things gross, right?
And Doom is a game that's full of body horror and grotesqueness.
But none of it really puts you off. Like, it's presented in a way that isn't, like, terrifyingly gory.
Yeah, I want to kind of make a point right now. Like, I'm not joking. Like, there's a lot of gore in this game.
Yeah, a lot.
And like, I'm not just talking about when you tear a demon in half with your bare hands, which you do. But, like, there are bodies everywhere, dismembered corpses throughout the whole facility, blood on the walls.
Yeah, like, demons summon people through by building these these flesh nests out of people.
Yeah, which is a bit full on, right? So, like, I have to be clear, the game is covered in all of this stuff. It's just how interesting how almost quickly you can kind of get desensitized to.
Yeah, because, like, you think about other games, like, because we were going to talk about the glory kills at one point, so we're inevitably going to bring up Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah.
In Spec Ops The Line, you have a lot of these close quarters kills and a lot of, like, you know, violence and gore in the environment. And all of that is very deliberately designed to be very, 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 very uncomfortable. And you have a game like this, which theoretically has a lot more gore in a linear sense, but it's so much less disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Like, because when you think about, like, the glory kills especially, it doesn't, like, shower you in offal or anything too bad. It's very quick and clean and well managed.
Yeah.
It's just, it gives you a point of being powerful.
Yeah.
And not being the terrifying, violent monster you kind of are.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk about that a little bit more in detail later, because we do want to go into how this game depicts violence, like the violence that you inflict. But I think that one of the first, the most important things we can talk about when talking about Doom is tone, totally. Right? And that's what makes that difference, is tone.
Yeah.
That difference between something like Spec Ops The Line and Doom, or Halo and Doom, is tone. And this game sets its tone very, very quickly and very, very clearly.
Just, like, instantly.
Yeah.
As soon as you start, it wastes no time in telling you, no, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Like, the first thing that you see when you wake up is you're still chained up in the sarcophagus, right?
Yeah.
And, like, before your eyes are even fully open, you're wrenching against those chains. It just, like, it shows, like, so immediately, like, how, like, just how brutal and quick that movement is, right? And how, like, erratic and so much, like, just in that first 2 seconds of you being inside the head of the player character, is so much communicated about what you're going to be doing from then on.
And then you just immediately break out of those chains and you just start smashing demons.
Yes.
You're not even wearing any clothes.
Yeah.
And there's never a moment of fear or anything. In another game in some games, when you're weaponless, it kind of makes you feel afraid. In this, it's almost like nothing makes this man afraid.
Yeah,
nothing
exactly. And it's like, you have this speed and this fervor to you in that first moment, and it's all communicated by so much. Like, the music is something that, again, we go back to that kind of that whole reboot thing. The music isn't dated, and it is contemporary in a lot of ways, but it's so evocative of that Doom soundtrack of just, like, that.
It's just classic heavy rock.
Yeah, it's not meant to be subtle, right? And, like, in most games, in most movies, the soundtrack is, you know, meant to be at least somewhat subtle. It's meant to be underneath the other stuff, but you're supposed to notice this, and it's so invigorating and like you say, empowering as far as the attitude of being in the head of the Doom Marine.
It sets the dial at 11, and it's just like, we're gonna go now and do this for the whole time.
And it also communicates, like, a self-awareness as well, because, like, it the music not being subtle, and the game is not designed to be subtle in any way, right?
How many times have I just watched a demon being torn apart in front of me with the character's bare hands?
Like,
this game is not subtle.
It barely takes itself seriously at all. It's just a very, very unapologetic, fun, bouncy, bloody experience.
I was almost shocked you didn't start with the double jump right at the beginning.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Bounce around the place while everything was going on.
That, like, in a way, I'm very thankful, because even though I knew it was going to be a very sort of Quake style speed shooter.
Yeah,
it took me a long time, longer than I thought I would need, to get used to just how fucking fast you walk, you know?
Yeah. Especially when you're used to cover-based shooters and things like that.
And even non-cover-based shooters. Like, I mean, what are the other action games we've played for this? We've done Bloodborne, which is slow by any standard other than the Souls standard. And Last of Us, which is, again, very deliberately heavy and slow and grounded.
I mean, I think, not Bloodborne, but Last of Us even has stealth built into it, which is very methodical and take your time. which I don't think there's any moment where you really wait into.
No, it's just bang, 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 bang.
The game never asks you to wait.
Like, the game itself never waits either. Like, it just communicates stuff so quickly and so effectively. A lot of people talk about, like, you know, you come out of the sarcophagus, you get the suit on, and then Samuel Hayden starts talking to you through that screen.
Yeah.
And that's a really big moment that a lot of people talk about, because he gets, like, 1/10 of the way through of what he's saying, and the Marine just reaches forward and smashes the screen.
Yes.
And it's like, that's great. That's awesome. My favorite moment, though, was just a little bit after that, where you go into the elevator and Hayden's talking to you again through the elevator thing, and he's talking about how we needed this energy. It was for the good of mankind. And as he's saying that, the Marine glances down to the floor of the elevator where there's like a half-dismembered corpse.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he smashes the thing, the title comes up, the music is blaring, and then the title goes down, the doors open up, and as the last like two guitar strums go in, they're timed with the shotgun going...
Yeah.
It's just every little detail of that whole opening segment is timed down to the millisecond,
yeah,
to like set up that tone and that way over the top non-subtle thing so fucking well.
And like the game is just fully littered with all of that.
Yeah.
I loved reading all of the flavor text in the game.
Oh, that was so much better than what I was expecting.
You would just like pick up, normally when you pick up like a notepad, you'd be like, oh, here's a bit of story.
This gun does damage.
And this gun does lots of damage because it's a specialer gun.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing. But in Doom, it does do that. And it does tell story in that way with the little data packs. But it just has lots of humor in there as well.
Yeah, like everything is written with a voice. Yes. Like you get the sense that somebody wrote this. Like some character in the world wrote what you're reading. It's really much, much more detailed than I was expecting in that regard.
But in talking about being written, like there's obviously a writer involved somewhere.
Yeah,
and it is
yeah.
just littered with jokes. I mean, there's like my favorite are where you get the flavor text for the health machine. So there's like regenerative nanocells. So you walk up to it and it'll re-knit your tissue backwards and forwards. But then it has a little two sentence part at the end where it goes, some people do experience side effects of feeling nauseous when using the machine. Just use the machine again and it will alleviate those effect.
Yeah, like just how like that's so fucking good. Like for some throwaway little line on a health pack, and everybody knows how this health pack works. I read every single one of these little flavor text and journals and stuff that I found because it was just interesting and fun to read them, you know?
It was worth it to find like a joke. Like a really good joke.
Like one of the ones they do a lot is that whole overlap between business speak and like being in a cult.
Oh,
so you've got a lot of, you know, if you're loyal and do good work, you'll become a tier two advocate. And it's like
and just
the fact that the word advocate sounds so much like acolyte. It's just so much little trips in there that again aren't really subtle, but they're just more cohesive than I would have expected.
I feel like they combined religion and business and then they came around to Scientology, but it feels like they did it backwards. They didn't go, oh, we're just aping Scientology.
It's
like,
just
we'll add religious and business, and you're like, oh, this is really weird and structured.
How crazy is it that ends up being just exactly like Scientology?
What a coincidence.
Yeah, but it is really cool. And like even in the objectives and stuff, they have a lot of that character.
Totally. I think there's an in-between level, because, you know, obviously in-between levels, you know, it'll give you a bit of flavor text on the next level, and there's a part where it says, oh, you know, the
Samuel Hayden is the character's name.
That Samuel Hayden, who is presented as like one of the main characters.
Yeah, so there's only, that's something else I love about this game. There's four characters in it, and you would think that that's too few, but I think that for the most part, it's actually the exact right number.
No, that's actually true. Yeah,
it's talking about the. I think I know the one you're talking about, where it's like, you know, Samuel Hayden offered.
He's offered to help you, but you don't need his help. All you need is ammo and a way to stop the evil things.
Yeah.
And
it's like, all you need is a gun, basically. Yeah. And it's just how, like, you're not supposed to be all like, yeah, I am the powerful demon killing man. It's so much more like, that's something that I was really surprised by. Is, you know, I said this at the start of the podcast. I was expecting there to be characterization in the Doom Marine, but nowhere near as much as there was. And that, it felt like so much of that stuff wasn't directed at me, the player. It was directed at the Marine, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not supposed to stand in the marine and be like, yeah, this is me. This is my character in Dragon Age, yeah. Right? Like, he's clearly an established character beyond that. And they can do so much more interesting stuff with him than they can with your generic action stoic guy like the Master Chief.
Yeah.
And so, like, we've talked a lot about, like, some of his early stuff, but, like, as you go through the plot, one of the things that people talk about a lot is that whole Doom Slayer backstory. So, for anybody who hasn't played the game, basically, the Doom Marine isn't just some guy in power armor. He's been, like, granted these powers by some other entity and become the Doom Slayer. And the Doom Slayer is this, like, feared entity by all demons.
Yeah, it's something when it just walks hell killing demons.
Yeah, he's driven by his thirst for vengeance. And again, it's all really deliciously over the top. But whenever I talk to people about this game and like that element of the Doom Slayer, they're all really like, oh yeah, the Doom Slayer. It's so like it's so much more than what you're expecting.
Yeah.
And when you're expecting so little and get something that is very tropey and is very generic, it's so much more. It kind of shows you the advantage of setting a low bar for expectation, I guess.
Yeah, so
but
true.
Yeah, that story is, again, it's unapologetic, and it knows exactly what it's trying to be. But once again, it's one of these things that separates the player from the Marine. And so we were talking about a lot of those glory kills and stuff before.
Yeah.
The visceralness of what's happening there, that's like an expression of that character.
Yes.
And so I think that there's almost like a distance that you, because you were talking about like getting popped out of it before. There's like a distance that I as a player have from the brutality because it's like the Marine doing it and not me. And that sounds like a weak excuse, but I'm talking more about the effects of this kind of design. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas sometimes people would use that as, like, they would say that as an excuse, but a lot of games, the character is you. So you are doing the violence.
And I don't want to divorce the player of choice here, obviously, because the ultimate choice any player can make is not to play the game. If you find it morally objectionable, it's like, oh yeah, I thought this was super fucked up, but I kept playing it because the Marine was doing it, not me. That's a dumb thing to say.
That's
right?
True. That's weak.
Yeah.
But by making the Doom Marine so personable and having that character and having that established story, this is what he wanted to do, and this is what he was going to do.
And it comes to it, like, because all of that Doom Slayer stuff comes to a head later, where it turns out, oh, actually, the powers you've been given aren't by any kind of human or angelic entity. It's by basically the hell before hell, right? So there's like some other civilization that hell's already conquered, and they were also really brutal and really
they're actually a lot like the company that the UAC
they're very, very hierarchical, and like they deify their leaders and all of that kind of thing. And so you're actually an agent of them, so you are an enemy of hell, not an ally of humanity. And I think that's a really interesting way to, like, encompass that. It's like, hey, this Doom Marine is fucked up, and what he's doing isn't good, right? He's not protecting anyone. He's not out there to help people. He's there to just fuck shit up, because I mean, that's what he wants to do.
There's a part in the game where I think Samuel asks you to disable this device.
Oh, yeah, the energy thing.
It purifies hell energy. Something I want to point out right now, I'm going to take this opportunity to have for my spiel, is the people at this base and Mars are way too comfortable with all of hell and just using hell and, like, hell being a thing that in a place.
Yeah, because, like, again, most people probably know this. The whole reason that this company is on Mars is to channel energy from hell to turn it into, you know, like, electrical power, because it's a huge energy crisis in the future, blah, blah, blah,
and
blah.
I don't think Earth knows, but, like...
Oh, they do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone knows the energy comes from hell.
It's like... Why does anyone... no one cares. No one's worried about this, mate.
But we'll talk about that when we come to themes, because that I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about. But yeah, there's that point in the game where you're going through and, like, Hayden, who's the head of this company, he wants you to remove the filters carefully so they can be put back in later.
Yeah.
But the Doom Marine, once again, in this great moment of characterization through animation, smashes the shit out of them.
Not only does he smash them, but as Samuel Hayden... like, berates you for being so brutal and thoughtless.
Yeah.
The Doom Marine gets more violent with each one.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's like he gets a kick out of pissing this guy off.
Yeah. It goes from him just kicking one of these things to, like, at the end, he, like, plunges his hand in and pulls out the power core. And you can see him wrap his fingers as he makes a fist. And you can just, like, destroying.
He just loves destroying shit. And I think that's, again, really, really interesting. Because when we come back to some of this stuff, this violence, when you think about it critically, it's like, is it cool of me to enjoy a game that's so violent? I think a lot of that stuff, again, it just serves to distance you a little bit and prevent some of that cognitive dissonance in the player. It's a shockingly, like, nuanced design in this game.
Admittedly, I did find it a little overwhelming because it's like that the whole time.
Yeah.
And the whole way through, I think there's only one moment where he does something I would call redeemable.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there is one point where it is a little bit like, oh, he does apparently have a little bit of soft side. And again, wasn't expecting that
wasn't
at
expecting
all.
That
I was
all.
Not expecting that at all. And so when that moment happened, I was like, that's so interesting and surprising.
Yeah. But for me, there was a point where I'm like, okay, I get it. Right, you're a terrible person.
Yeah.
Right? That's probably, it was like, it just felt overwhelming.
And I think it's also okay to play games about terrible people because we watch movies about terrible people all the time.
All the time.
The part that complicates it is when we're the player, we're theoretically supposed to be in a more complicit position.
What's, oh my God.
Kane and Lynch is what you want to talk about?
No, okay. We're not talking about video games. We're talking about movies right now because you mentioned movies. You mentioned other media.
Yeah.
Right. My brain had a whole conversation without you. Godfather.
Yeah, the Godfather.
Right? They're all criminals.
Yeah, they're all
criminals. Every person in that movie is a criminal.
Yeah, Breaking Bad is about horrible people.
Breaking Bad is about the story of a good man becoming evil. Like,
yeah, and I want to make this very clear. Not a good man becoming cool. A good man becoming a really horrible person.
Yeah.
And the recognition that, like, sure, something pushed him to that, but ultimately that's what he always wanted to some degree anyway. He fell in love with his own legend and his own power and all that kind of stuff. And so the cancer at the end of it doesn't even fucking matter. Like, and we critically acclaim these things. And then we get to games. And I think part of it is because in games, a lot of the time, it's not critically assessed. In a game like Doom, though, it is self-aware. It does point to the behavior of the Doom Marine as something that's destructive. And it does construct it as he's not protecting people.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't think forward about humanity. And you can see that when, like, he needs somebody's retinal scan. And so he'll find a corpse and just rip its head off. And when he puts the head in the scanner, he doesn't hold it delicately. He just full smashes it face first into the scanner.
Throws
it
away.
He doesn't give a shit about people at all.
Yeah.
What he's there to do is destroy. And that's... It sounds so stupid to say something that shallow and one-dimensional is deeper than what I was expecting. But them examining that and characterizing that and not just making you the whole, oh, you're the Master Chief, you're the good guy who's going to save the galaxy, that's cool. That's more narratively complex than what I was expecting.
Yeah. I think that's, again, like you said, they set that low bar and then they just executed everything very well.
Yeah.
Very comfortably written. Again, it comes back to knowing the strengths, playing to them.
Yeah, and there are games that try harder and do less.
Yeah.
There are other characters that are really interesting as well. Samuel Hayden, I think, is a very interesting character because, once again, so this is the closest thing to a spoiler that I can think of in the game. Samuel Hayden is the head of this company. He's angry at you for destroying stuff, but he knows he needs you to stop the whole hell thing.
Because you're literally like a force of nature.
Yeah, and he knows that you're literally like a force
but
of nature.
As the game progresses, he's just like, you just want to kill things, don't you? Oh,
yeah.
You're going to love this. This is just
killing
things.
Yeah, he actually does at some point start to find it amusing the way the Doom Marine behaves. Because there's a point where, like, they need an Argent Accumulator to get you back to hell. And he knows that means you're going to have to fight a cyber demon. And he gets a kick out of that.
Yeah.
Like, he thinks that's going to be fun to watch. Samuel Hayden is very, very interesting because he's like, when you first hear him, it's just a voice. You don't have a face to it at all. And so immediately they're characterizing him as someone who's divorced from what's going on around him. He's aloof. He's removed.
Yeah.
Yeah? He has the bird's eye view, not the down on the ground view. And then eventually you run into him and it turns out that he's not even a human. He was a human who's in this cybernetic robot body because he had cancer hundreds of years ago.
A huge
I think he's supposed to be 130 years old.
Yeah, he's like a giant robot.
Yeah, he's like over 3 meters tall. And so, like, there's some stuff like they couldn't have him be human from a narrative perspective because all of the humans died when the whole thing happened. So there's part that maybe that's a bit of a hand wave.
Don't talk about the plot too much.
We don't want to talk about the plot too much.
So they turned on the demon waves and then all the humans died.
And they needed a reason for him to stay alive, so he was a robot. And maybe that's where the seed of that character came from. But again, like, they could have made him a normal-sized robot. They made him 3 meters tall. And that's because... And they have all this stuff in the flavor text about why, when he was constructing a body, he made one that was so imposing and so terrifying and doesn't even look anything close to human. And there are character choices that motivate why he looks like that, you know?
And my favorite piece of flavor text is when they talk about he turns on the accumulator and it's live streamed to Earth. And he flips a 12-foot tall switch.
Yeah.
Himself in his giant robot body. And the flavor text is like, everyone got the point he was trying to make.
It's just like, that he's the only one who can turn on the switch. Yeah.
He's like giant robot man controls all power.
Yeah. And like just the voice acting for him is brilliant as well. Like, I don't know who they had cast as him, but really, really good work. I really love him. I love that character. And the thing is, he talks very coldly and very rationally about the energy crisis. And I think you mentioned this before the podcast, but apparently all of the plutonium and uranium on Earth is depleted at this point. There's no more energy.
I mean, the sun still
exists. The sun still exists. You know, you could potentially harness the sun.
Apparently green energy is not something we've explored in this future. And yeah. I have a whole sort of confused look at the idea of... I'm not going to get into science, but there's like sort of confusing science
and
reasons.
And when you talk about sci-fi and stuff, though, like it isn't just Earth and Mars that are colonized. There are other planets that are colonized. And basically,
moons and stuff.
There's this energy grid. They harvest the hell energy from Mars and then distribute it amongst this, at least the solar system, but perhaps even to other stars.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about energy on this scale, and he talks about how like it was a necessity, it wasn't even a choice. There are some characters that use that as like feeble justifications to make profit. I honestly think he believes that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think that it's totally, and this is again when we come back to the Doomerine not caring. When Hayden is trying to explain to the Doomerine why he can't smash these filters that make the hell energy viable, there's a moment that I'm sitting there thinking, going, this could mean like world war whatever on Earth if this energy source is cut off, you know. When we talk about Hayden and what he's doing, it's hard to even know whether or not he is being selfish. He's being fucking cold as all hell, sure. Like he's being he's brutally cold and brutally aloof. Distant.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that when he says stuff like, we need this hell energy, we need this to happen, that might be a political fact of that world.
He does really feel like a human ideal of science.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I really like his cynicism and his sarcasm and the way that all comes through in that character. It's again, really, really quite cool. The other big character in the game is Olivia Pierce. And she is the bad guy, basically. She's the one who triggered this whole thing that got all the demons coming out.
Yeah.
And it's cool that they have this character be a woman.
Yep.
You know, if you're going to have a cast of four characters, at least one of them should be. But I do feel like if there's one character that's massively underserved, it is her.
1,000%. Yeah. It's like, why does she want to be evil?
Yeah, exactly.
Because she does.
Yeah, it's not really fleshed out.
Oh, and the power of evil.
I want to make it clear here. When I talk about her being underserved, I'm not talking about like taking attendance. Oh, it's it should have been 50% women. I mean, like this character who is ostensibly the villain of the game barely has any character.
And I think that really detracts from the character.
Yeah.
And it's really disappointing because it was like a lot of pathos? Is the right word?
Yeah.
The payoff for the end. When you beat the bad person, because spoilers, you beat the bad person. it doesn't really pay off too much because you don't know why they're bad.
It's very, very generic. Like what I get the impression of, and they do hint this in some of the flavor text, is that she had no interest in doing Argent Energy. Then Hayden sent her an object and then she had to go. And so it's basically what I get is she was seduced by the dark side. She got ensnared by a demon magic spell that made her evil. And that's very boring.
If you remember back to when we talked about Life is Strange.
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about one of the plots in that sort of just existing and being tropey.
Yeah.
Right. When all you have is that tropey plot and it's just done with all the stereotypes, it just removes a lot of the energy and momentum and build up when it's just kind of like, I'm a bad guy.
And especially because like there are a couple of lines that I feel like they wanted Olivia, at some point in the design process, Olivia was going to be a more fleshed out character than she was. But I think that like they just ended up putting their focus in other places. Because you get like this line right before the big boss fight. You know, she's been pulled into hell and she's standing there and she's got blood all over her face. And she's like...
And like cuts and stuff. And it's like, you're like going, whoa, what happened?
Yeah, what happened? And she goes, they promised me so much. And then she turns into a giant demon monster.
Yeah.
And it's like, could I know even like 1% of what it is they promised you? Was it just power?
Because like,
you were super fucking rich on Earth already.
She was probably the second most powerful person of all humans after Samuel Hayden.
Yeah.
Right? Like I think the game even talks
if you want to get technical about it, that would make her the most powerful human.
Human, yeah. I mean, Yeah, it's like, it's 100% true. It's like, yeah. She's the most powerful human on the
planet.
So,
yeah, what is it they promised her? Was it, like, secret knowledge? Yeah, like, I don't even know if it's power or knowledge or immortality or any of the other generic tropey shit.
I talked about this before, but I think the real reason why it's so annoying is because you don't expect anything. And then the game delivers a really wonderful, tight narrative and lots of characters and lots of story. And then it just falls over with her character and motivation. Yeah. And you're like, I didn't expect anything. And then you gave me so much, but then you didn't stick the landing 100%. Yeah, because
like, her characterization is okay in some of the flavor texty type things.
Yeah.
So you hear about how, you know, she had some spinal cord condition or nervous system condition, and she could have had surgery and lived a otherwise normal life in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Or have gone through an experimental surgery to bind herself to this exosuit. And she went with the experimental surgery. And that says something about her character.
It also is important to point out that she's in constant pain.
Yes. And that was the other thing I was going to say. She's in constant pain because of this and doesn't take any meds because she doesn't want to be dulled by it.
Yeah.
And so you would kind of go back to it. Well, if your mind is the most important thing, why didn't you pick the wheelchair? You
know, yeah. Like,
I say that as though it's a plot hole. That stuff says a lot of very interesting things to me about how she perceives herself and what she needs her body to be for her to consider herself to be like at her peak and at, and powerful and the way other people perceive her. She doesn't want to be perceived as weak.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting. But that's stuff I'm writing in on top of what they've given me. I feel like there was a lot that they wanted to do that they just didn't dedicate the time to as part of the core game.
If you hold like Samuel Hayden and Olivia on one side of the scales. You can just clearly see where they put a lot of the focus.
Yeah, but even Vega is more characterized than Olivia. And
that's true. And Vega is kind of a throwaway.
You know, screenwriting 101, a good movie needs a good antagonist.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And, I think it's interesting that they got bored of her.
I think ultimately, again, we've talked about spoilers being off. You get betrayed by the ambiguous person who's helping you, right? And that's why they put a lot of focus into his character.
Yeah, because he's coming back. Hayden's coming back as someone else.
And this was, she's not.
Yeah, I think I might have already said this, but like, that's probably the least, like the closest thing to a spoiler is that he doesn't betray you until the game is finished.
Yeah. And like it ends like right. He betrays you in the game. So.
Yeah, and like it is a bit of a feeble ending.
Yeah,
honestly,
endings are hard, right?
Endings are hard. And what are you going to do?
I don't have any better ideas. Like, and like,
he disappears you off to some unknown location and is like, I'll rebuild.
Somehow. And I'm not really sure what you do after Doom. Because I feel like every time they release Doom, they just release a different version of the same game.
Yeah.
And in different ways for like the culture. Like, so Doom 3 came out and it was like all moody and scary and spooky and like a horror kind of story.
Because that was the thing at the time.
In vogue at the time. And then this comes out and it's like this bombastic.
Yeah, because we're starting to accept the fact that games don't have to be all moody and serious and we like things that are fun and silly. Like, there's so many examples of us embracing that now.
Totally. There's only so seriously you can take yourself.
Mm.
You got to be a bit ridiculous every so often.
What do you want to go on to now? You want to talk about gameplay at all? I feel like we've covered that mostly.
What do you say? It's tight.
Yeah, it's just really fucking good.
It is exactly what you want. It is slick. You zoom around the place, shooting things.
Yeah, you do like these mantles and stuff to get up on higher ledges, which is...
The game is like broken up into arenas.
Mm.
And as the game progresses, these become more obvious.
Yeah, at the start, they do a really good job of masking the level design of... You know, corridor section, arena section, corridor section, arena section. But towards the end, and it starts to become really obvious when you go to hell, just because of the way that it sort of folds back in on itself.
The first time you go to hell is fantastic and weird, and you backtrack and all this kind of stuff. But the later ones are just giant arenas.
Yeah, the very last level of hell is an arena and an arena and an arena. And because they're sort of set up to be like part of this temple, the floor plan of them is identical of these three arenas. Yeah. They vary it with the enemies they give you.
Rooms.
But it really hits home at the end. It's just like the game did not overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
But if it had been any longer, it would have. I think it was as long as it could possibly be without me getting exhausted by it.
And like again, like the game comes with arcade mode, so some people will play this again on harder difficulties and will have fun with that.
Yeah.
Totally
and
fine.
I can see myself playing this again in like a year. But like you say, towards the end, some of them get very stale. Like there's missions towards the end where they just throw hundreds of imps at you. Yeah. And you feel like, have I not flipped the switch that stops these guys from spawning or something? It's like, no, there's just that fucking many of them.
Or there was one point when there was like 5 revenants in a room. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
There's just more of you now.
And yeah.
And when you go from glory kill, when you go into a glory kill, you become semi-invulnerable. So you're just jumping from invulnerability to shooting someone to invulnerability. And
that said, this is all right at the end, as I said, when it's just getting to the point of overstaying its welcome. The other thing that I thought was kind of disappointing from a gameplay perspective were the boss fights themselves. The Cyber Demon was a lot of fun. They were, like, when you have such highly polished multiple enemy combat, and then you go into these boss fights that are just... you can see where the strength of the game is, you know? And they were still very good, but they were just... They weren't, like...
My favorite moments of this game was when I was playing on one of, on the... Because I originally played most of the game on the higher difficulty. Yeah. And when you were playing on that higher difficulty, you had to really listen around you.
Yeah, that's so very, like, very cool, isn't it?
You would be like, oh, I've got this guy in front of me. I'm shooting him, but I can hear an imp off to my side. I can hear a soldier on
my right. Surround sound helps.
Yes, sound helps a lot. But you get that 3D vision, and so you really do feel like you're managing a whole bunch of problems with machine guns and chainsaws.
Yeah,
and
like then when that spatial awareness is very desperately important.
But then when you get to a boss fight, I'm like, wait, I have to pay attention to one thing?
Yeah.
Anyway.
The bosses were good. But no more than good, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, though, I mean, we should probably get onto some of the themes we said we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, what can you say about the gameplay other than it's really good and doomy?
Yeah. If you want to run around shooting things with a whole bunch of different guns, play this game.
So, there are two main themes, I think, in this game. One of them is that idea of the energy crisis. We've already talked about that when we're talking about Samuel Hayden. The other one is kind of tied to that, and that's that whole, are humans the real monsters?
Are they truly the most evil?
Yeah. Not even not the most evil, but are humans worth saving, I guess is the thing. Because you have this environment where humanity has exploited an energy source at great risk to itself, basically to feed its own gluttony.
Yeah.
Like you said, they haven't developed clean energy. They haven't thought to harness the sun, which, I mean, there might be in-universe reasons why they can't. And, you know, it wouldn't be much of a Doom game if you come out of the sarcophagus and everyone's like, hey, there are no demons. We're using solar power.
Wind turbines, apparently.
Yeah, real good. There's a lot of wind on Mars.
Got it sorted.
Yeah.
You want a mojito?
The Doom Marine's like, fuck yeah, I'd love a mojito.
Good lord, I haven't had a break in 10,000 years.
Yeah, I've not had a drop of alcohol since, like, in 3 centuries. But you do have this idea that, like I said, it feels very self-inflicted. And you get that through Hayden. And Hayden, like, justifying this whole thing is just like, you know, it was necessary.
Almost constantly.
It's necessary now.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it was necessary 100 years ago or whatever.
The game never elaborates on that.
It doesn't dive too deep into the global warming argument, but I do feel like it is ultimately making at least a nod to that. It's like, hey, guys, maybe sort your shit out now.
Yeah.
Maybe sort your shit out, guys. Hey, humanity, sort your fucking shit out.
Yeah, I guess. To a small degree, yeah.
It's not a main focus at all. Like, I think you've said this already, but if you don't care about the narrative, you don't have to think about it at all. And this is not pushed in any heavy way.
I said it before, as the game streamlines you not having to care.
Yeah.
Like, you can just skip story moments, and you can just avoid every text pickup. You can just go to arena and shoot the heart content.
Yeah. So. The main thing that makes me think that this question of, is humanity worth saving, are people good, is thought about at all, is because the less human a character is of the main characters, the more on your side they are, right? Of the three main characters, you've got
Olivia,
who's the most human.
Yeah.
Then Samuel Hayden, who's the second most human. And then Vega, who's not really human at all. He's human designed. You've got the demons, obviously, which you could argue are very not human. But the Doom Marine is less human probably than Olivia is, if you actually put that on like a linear scale.
Totally. Yeah. As someone who never speaks.
Yeah. And Vega is the only character that is uncompromisingly good. You know? Like, maybe not uncompromisingly, but unwaveringly good.
There's this whole section of the game where you help to dismantle him. To make a portal into hell.
And he's saying, like, the only way to get you back to hell is to destroy me. I cannot self-terminate, so I will talk you through the process. And there's just no...
I mean, that ultimately does lead to the Doom Marine's only act of kindness in the game, which is where he backs up
Vega. Yeah, so you're going through this whole thing, you're smashing up all the parts of Vega, then you get to the last button, press this to kill Vega, and he hits back up first and then kills it. And there's this great moment where he's looking at the screen, and the way the camera is pointed at the console that he's using, you can't see the backup button, and he goes to hit the big red delete Vega, destroy the reactor or whatever, and he kind of pauses and does that little twirl of his fingers like to think, then hits the backup button that you couldn't see originally when he turns. Again, a lot of the camera work in this is very, very good.
Yeah.
And it's very immediate. He backs him up, grabs it, and chucks the card into the suit, which is what he's done with all of the other data cards he's done up to that point.
Yeah, which is one of the collectibles, yeah.
Yeah. And then deletes it. And it's all just so quick as well. Yeah. Like, it after, like, his movements whenever he does this stuff, the Doom Marine, are really, really fast. Whenever he opens up a map, he just goes bang, bang, bang. Like, you can barely read the buttons that he hits. And so this moment where he hesitates before pressing a button on a console stands out so much. And then when he decides to back Vega up, then it is just bang, bang, bang. Like, the pause there was making a decision, not grappling with the interface or anything. It's all, again, a great moment of characterization for the Doom Marine and for Vega in that point.
I guess in a way you could say the only character worth saving got saved.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And so that's the main thing that makes me question how good humanity is supposed to be, especially when you come back to it again. The Doom Marine's motivation is not to save people.
Yeah, then that's
true. The Doom Marine's motivation is to destroy demons.
Also, as I said before, they're literally harnessing the powers of hell. Like, yeah. I don't know how long
and
it
this,
takes
yeah,
to
and this
justify
is where,
that.
This is where I wanted to bring this back up. Like, everyone on Earth knows, right? They know that...
I don't actually know if everyone on Earth knows. I swear there's an entry you read where the people, like the global council on Earth, is trying to figure out, and UAC doesn't tell them.
There is some secrecy to it, and they definitely don't talk about the demon experiments and shit. The way I read some of that stuff was that people know that the energy comes from hell.
Right.
And I think that, once again, that points to, and it's not a huge thing, but, you know, the war in the Middle East and all that kind of stuff, like how easily people distance themselves from something when they get what they want out of it.
Oh, that's a great point. I didn't even think about that. That's what an interesting parallel.
I remember, talking about all of this stuff, I remember a Penny Arcade comic that came out around this time, and they were like, oh man, I can't wait till some granola-fed hipster blogger talks about mineral rights in hell. And, like, effectively, that is what we're doing now. But, like, where they were being dismissive of it, it's just like, oh, these hipsters are going to turn this into whatever. I think the designers of the game were clearly aware of the parallels they were making with oil reserves and the energy crisis that we're facing on Earth right now. I think that they were playing with those ideas deliberately to make you ask a couple of questions.
Maybe we can ask them one day. But but I do think that what they design, what they write into the game does actually point to that.
I don't think you could, after playing this game, I think if you were to say, oh, it's just a dumb shooter, they're not trying to make any points. Yeah, firstly, that's not how the analysis of art works. Everything is about something if it seems that way to the audience. Also, it clearly is far too carefully designed for that.
And just so tight. Like, it's like you don't build a game that feels this responsive without thinking about every part of it.
Yeah. That said, though, I do think there was some stuff that could have used a bit more thought.
Oh.
So, there were a couple of little tropes about this game that I found a bit uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest one is that there's that whole thing about, you know, hell, these grotesque deformed demons, blah, 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 blah. So you have this equivalence of, like, evil being represented by deformity. And when you have Samuel Hayden and Olivia also both being stricken with significant diseases and that affecting their physiology in some way, you start to run into this trope of disability is grotesque and grotesquery is evil, you know?
Yeah.
So you've got... we've talked about how Olivia has that spinal disease and she gets herself into this...
The exosuit.
And so she looks very withered and she's old and she's hunched over and she doesn't walk very comfortably and all of this kind of thing. And she's like the most evil character in the game. It is uncomfortable, I think. That's one of the things that I would have liked maybe a slightly more like aware thought about.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, there's... From all the demons are grotesque. And then you're right. Like, there's nothing else. I mean, who's the nicest character in the game is a disembodied voice.
It's Vega that's formless, right? Like, that's basically digital. And then you have the Doom Marine, who's also, like, ultimately a mutant.
Yeah.
But he has a humanoid form that's tough and big and strong.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Where he goes, jumps.
The power that he's inherited doesn't deform him.
Yeah, and he tears demons in half and can jump around the place.
And, yeah. Yeah. And so, and then you've also got Hayden to a lesser extent. And obviously you could argue about Hayden that, like, oh, he is much purer in form because he's a sleek robot who looks very, you know, and I use that to characterize him, sure. But at the same time, he is still not fully human, and he is still, you know, because he has cancer or something. He has one of the noble diseases.
Yeah.
I said that just so everybody knows what I mean when I say that. There are diseases in films and stuff that are like, that allow a person to have a noble death. Right now, leukemia is pretty much that big one, or different forms of cancer.
Yeah.
Around the turn of the century, it was syphilis, but it's no longer syphilis because we know that syphilis is like an STD.
Yeah.
But when people didn't know what caused it, you look in theater around like the 1850s and stuff, that's, people had the noble death from that. And so, you know, Hayden is killed by a noble disease rather than a gross disease like AIDS that he got from a heroin injection or whatever. Yeah. But it is still, we are still hitting those notes of like, of that. And it's not very,
I think this is,
it's not very consciously minded when it comes to people who have disabilities.
This is the problem when you streamline a design.
Yeah.
And you fall into using tropes to tell stories. Yeah. Cause, and the game operates very quickly. And I think it just, because it's moving so fast, it doesn't take into account broader aspects of its themes.
Yeah.
Because it's just focusing on what it's trying to do.
And
that's not to excuse it. I'm just saying that he is so focused on in delivering this experience that it then ends up inadvertently setting up this.
Again, it's, of course, none of this stuff is deliberate. It's just that I wish that maybe someone had thought about that a little bit more. The other one that kind of bothers me a little bit as far as uncomfortable tropes go is that you have one female character in this game, and there are some female-coded, like some feminine-coded demons, but most of the demons are coded male.
And yeah,
and some of them are explicitly male, like the Mancubus.
Yeah, and there's the only other times you ever sort of see female characters is corpses.
Yeah. So you have one, like, actual character that's a woman, and they're the villain, which is fine. Women can be evil. But when you get to the end of that boss fight, the way that you do the glory kill on Olivia's spider monster is you take the BFG and put it in her mouth and fire.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of, like, psychoanalytic readings of stuff, but everyone kind of knows that guns are a little bit phallic.
Yeah.
And when you put one in the you have so many glory kills in this game, and I didn't do every single one. Maybe there is another one where you kill someone by shoving a gun down their throat. Because they're all going to be melee kills, aren't they?
There is one where you, the mancubus and the
oh, you shove the organ into its mouth. Into its mouth.
There is that. But most of the time, it's...
I wouldn't... So, yeah, there is other stuff with, like, eat this kaboom. And so, again, I don't think it's conscious that it's like, yeah, suck my dick, you fucking slut, or
there's
whatever.
There's no designer sat there and was like, yes, this is what I'm going to do.
The other really important thing that Olivia, a big part of her character is her faith in her own intelligence. And I feel like what they were probably trying to do there is have you blow her brains out.
Yeah.
Because when the monster turns, when Olivia turns into the monster, it's got this gigantic
brain,
overflowing brain. And by putting the gun in the mouth and pulling the trigger, you completely destroy the entire head.
Yeah, it's so like a channel down the middle.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were doing. But again, when I the first thing I looked at was just like, really? Because if it could have been, it could have been the cyber demon. You know what I mean? Like, if you wanted to have that big suck my BFG dick.
Again, like, I didn't think about that way of telling that scene when I did it. I did find it a bit over. I was like,
yeah,
this is a bit over the top. Like, I mean, admittedly, all the glory kills are over the top, but it just seemed a bit weird.
Yeah, because the other thing too, as well, is that the character is motivated by hate, and a lot of the destructive glory kills are about destroying the face of the thing. So it's about channeling that hate in destroying the monster.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was super appropriate for Olivia, because especially the way the game constructed her, when she's got that moment of like, they promised me so much, I've been tricked. And they also go to the point of characterizing the fact that she had no interest in this until the magic spell was cast on her and she fell to the dark side. To attack that character with the most explicit hate-filled glory kill. I don't know. From a narrative point, it doesn't really suit what I think the game's trying to do
and
there.
And again, it doesn't help that they didn't characterize her perfectly. Yeah, and so exactly. Everything's like, ambiguous.
If she'd been more monstrous, you know? Like, because they talk about how she sacrifices people, but
and
like...
There's a scene where... a hologram scene, because the story is told through holograms, which I should have mentioned way sooner.
And you think that would be shit, but they make it work in this one.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. There's a scene where you watch her... getting people to commit sacrifices, right? And
yeah.
it's not explored properly.
Yeah, it doesn't really paint her as like I feel like the evil as far as like oh this character is doing bad shit that caused all of this. Hayden is so much more responsible than she is, you know? Like the way they characterize him and his role in setting up the facility is much more a focus than her role in bringing the demons into it, you know? And so like when you have that final kill and it's just so, there's so much, it's so graphic and visceral. And like you said, there's lots of glory kills, but this is such a specific one.
Yeah, I feel a bit conflicted about the use of violence in this game. Like I talked about earlier, there's games like Postal and Hatred, which are games about almost glorifying violence and committing it against people. And the violence, when I was playing through the first half of this game, and I wasn't really rushing along, I was taking my time.
Yeah,
it's just as someone who, So there's the idea of talking about the use of violence. In entertainment, in enjoyment, in personal enjoyment as well. And there are a lot of ways that people express this, whether it's through games or through sports. You know, some of these acts mirror violence. And then you can even get into more overt themes where this whole kink subculture about masochism and sadism and pain, which gets to right to the level of it. And now, when I think about the violence in Doom... I almost feel burnt by the hatred and the rage. I think that this game taps into rage a lot, which is mindless violence, which I find very affronting personally, because the idea of that uncontrollable violence that's just committed, it kind of clashes with myself personally.
Yeah.
And it was, I found it to get really confronting, and I had to actively divorce myself from the experience to be anywhere near comfortable with it. And so there is something to be said. It's like, if you're not super thrilled with violence, this game is full of violence.
Yeah.
And it's not particularly deep about it.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, I think that there are games, like in a game like Gears of War, where you take the chainsaw and you chainsaw someone in half. I feel like when you do that, you as a player are meant to go, fuck yeah, and you're meant to feel powerful because of it. I know this sounds like such a fucking excuse, like because, you know, I think this is a better game than Gears of War. I think this game works to make the player separate from that. When I was getting these glory kills and chopping the head of a monster in half or whatever with a chainsaw, I wasn't sitting there going, grr, yeah, and maybe that just speaks to me. But I mentioned this already. Like, they separate the Doom Marine from the player. And I think that it comes back to something a little bit more like The Godfather or something like that. That said, the game still does glorify violence.
Yeah.
And even games that ultimately have an anti-war or anti-violent message, most of the time still glorify violence because that's the tool of power that you use to achieve your goal, right?
Yeah.
So it is a very, very deep discussion, and maybe we could have like an episode that's just about that, just talking about what the depiction of violence in different media. But I do definitely understand why you would be off-put by that.
Yeah. I actually was... I wrote this because... Spoilers, we write notes to help us do this podcast.
Yeah, because otherwise, like, you know, like I don't know, it's almost like we're a we take it seriously or something.
We do take it seriously. I'd hardly go down the professional route.
Yeah.
But I wrote this in at the start because I didn't want to talk about it. And as we have done this podcast, Meta, I have like re-loved the game for all of the wonderful things about it.
I feel like that's a really great thing about having this conversation with another person, right? So conversation helps hone your own ideas.
Yeah.
I remember when I played Spec Ops The Line, I was this one of my favorite games, if not my favorite game. I think it's an amazing game, and it's one of the handful of games that does not glorify violence, and it has a very clear and unambiguous anti-violent message because of how it's put together. I remember after playing that, I had a conversation with my girlfriend at the time about it because I was just infected by how powerful an experience that was. And even though she didn't play it, we had a long conversation about it. And a lot of my ideas developed and were honed simply because I had someone to bounce them off, yep. You know, even without that person bringing their own perspective of the game because they hadn't played it. And that's what's awesome about this as well. Like, we've talked about how this is really rewarding because we get to play games that we didn't play before. But it also, I know that when I'm finished playing this game, I can have a discussion about it with someone. And that's very invigorating.
That's true. Violence is something, violence and aggression and all of these kind of stuff is something I explore a lot in my own life. It's very thoughtful, and it feels confronting to, in a way, to play something that's not thoughtless, but it kind of is. It feels, it's the personification of thoughtless violence.
Yeah, and this is the other thing too. Again, some people use this as an excuse, and it's very, very dangerous to use this idea as an excuse. You being aware of the fact that this game can influence the way you feel about violence already does a lot to ameliorate that effect. Yeah. So because the fact that you're asking yourself that question is very important. And you were talking about kink and stuff before. Like, I know people who are so into the idea of not shaming someone for their likes that they say you shouldn't ask questions about what you like or what you watch.
And that's weird.
And it's like, okay, I shouldn't judge or question you, but you should question yourself. You know, I think that if you're into something, you should have at least a vague idea of why you like it. And so if I was to play a game like Doom and never question the fact that, like, okay, do I like this because it's mindlessly violent? Does this, you know, do I like this because I'm actually a very hate-filled person and I need an outlet for that anger? I need to ask myself that question when I play a game like this. And so I think it's healthy that you're doing it. Personally, I don't think that... I think there are games that are less obviously violent than this that are much more dangerous in that regard. I think that the way that this game is self-aware and does...
manage its tone, really.
Yeah, manage its tone. And like I said, it is critical of the Doom Marine. You know, the game is critical of this Marine and his... Like, we didn't talk about this, but the Doom Marine's also just a fucking idiot, right? Like, he falls into the most obvious of traps and stuff. And that's, again, very deliberate because he's not a forward-thinking person.
The game is set up. You start because you fell into a trap. It ends because you're in a trap. You never do anything to get yourself out of the cycle of violence.
Yeah. This demon... This Doom Hunter... is basically a demon just on a different side.
Is this a parallel, like a syphilis? No, it's syphilis, John.
It's probably not a syphilis, a synonym?
No, the dude with the boulder. I was trying to make
Sisyphean.
I was trying to make a very pointed philosophical reference, and I fucked it.
And also, you've disappointed your entire family.
Yes.
John Nicolaitis.
It was a cultural, personal cultural reference, and I got completely wrong.
Yeah.
But it feels like the story of the boulder up the hill. Like, it's just, he's always just constantly just being violent, and the violence is all he is, and it just gets him nowhere.
You see, and that's the thing that I think is very important, is that for me, it matters that the text is critical of the Doom Marine. Like, the depiction of how he inflicts violence isn't noble. It doesn't mean that. I think we've talked, like, there's John Wick. I should share that video with John Wick.
And
we talk about how John Wick isn't a good man. We like him, though, because he's good at what he does.
Yeah.
Which is a very, I mean, it's interesting you brought up that Sisyphean thing, because that's a very classical Greek antiquity way of just having stories. You didn't have good characters and evil characters. You had talented or powerful characters and pathetic or feeble characters. And that's where your interest lies. The people you wanted to win were the excellent characters. And I think we get a lot of the same stuff with this. We like the Doom Marine because he is good at what he does and good at violence. We don't like him because he is a good person, or his morality and his moral compass is well set.
No, that's a great point.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Doom, right?
That's Doom. Yeah. I got bit philosophical.
Yeah. I don't know how much room we'll have left for that, but hopefully, because it's kind of interesting stuff, and maybe some people can, you know, sound off their thoughts on that in the comments and whatnot. If I can be shameless about this,
yeah. No, it's like, honestly, email us. talk to us on all these pages. Like, we would, like, this is for both of us to do, but we are interested if you're listening to this, we would love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, exactly. I love to be told I'm wrong by someone who's thought it through.
Yes.
Like, honestly, that's an interesting thing. So if you do want to engage in the conversation, you can head to our website at slowpokespodcast.com. You can comment on everything there. We are obviously also available on iTunes.
Yes.
Don't know if that's the best place to have a conversation.
No, but apparently you should leave a review because that's what people always say.
Yes, there we go. Yeah, that's something.
David just suddenly got very excited when I said leave a review.
Well, I'm just trying to think, like, you know, community engagement.
Yeah.
You know, people want, like, I think that the conversations we have are interesting enough that at least somebody wants to tell us that we're fuckwits, right?
Yeah.
And I want to give people the avenue to express that.
Yeah, I want people to be able to channel their hate into well-formatted emails and essays.
Into the glory kills of the digital age, which is iTunes reviews.
Yes,
iTunes. One-star reviews on iTunes.
Ooh, so scathing. I feel like I'm being literally torn in half. You can also talk to us on Twitter at SlowpokesCast, and our Facebook page is another great place.
More people seem to be engaging with the Facebook page. Maybe that's because of our nationality. Like, I feel like Twitter isn't that big in Australia.
No,
when compared to America.
Yeah, of course, but that's fine. Like, hopefully some Americans start listening to this show.
We also appreciate, like, we have gotten a bunch of likes, which is awesome. We also appreciate the shares that we've been getting too.
Yeah.
If, again, we can be a little bit shameless, shares are the more valuable one because they do allow us to get, get a few more ears towards our mouth holes.
Now, what you should do, right, is bring the podcast up with all your friends. And now I'm not saying all the time, but every second time, minimum.
Yes, every second time, I think, is like bare minimum.
Now, if we're going for tattoos, the forehead is a really good place because it's present, because your friends, good friends, should be looking you in the eyes. And where is the forehead?
Right above the eyes. Exactly. This is the other thing too. You could get it off somewhere else, obvious, like a bicep or a wrist.
Yeah.
But everyone gets tattoos there.
Exactly.
If you get a tattoo on your forehead, someone's going to ask you about it. And that is brand engagement.
Yes. That's sharing. And remember, sharing is caring.
Yeah, so that is all of our shameless self-promotion.
Yep.
But what about the people who hate the idea of being our commercial shills but do still want to listen to our shit? What are we doing next time, John?
Oh, next time? Oh, we're going to play This War of Mine?
This War of Mine.
Yes.
So that is another one that's a little bit... I think that's 2015? I'm not exactly sure.
I don't remember the dates.
This War of Mine is going to be very interesting because it's going to have a different depiction of violence than Doom, I would imagine.
It's 1,000%. It was sort of... It's like...
Have you played it?
I have played a little bit of it.
Okay. I think I've bought it on a Humble Bundle or something, but I've never even downloaded it. So this will be a completely fresh run for me.
It's kind of... I think it's a little bit autobiographical of someone's experience of being in a war-torn country.
Yeah.
And the stories that are depicted of people.
So I'm expecting to be pretty sad.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to have my perspective opened, which is usually uncomfortable, but this will be a particularly uncomfortable perspective opening.
Most likely.
But critically acclaimed game, small budget. I'm always glad to support it. And a lot of my friends have told me it's great. So
it'll be fun to have an experience.
Yeah. So that's it from us this fortnight, which is bye week if you're from one of those countries that doesn't use cool words like fortnight.
Cool.
I like Fortnite because it's like... a barricaded position.
Yes.
In the darkness.
No, that's so true. No. But yeah, that's all from us. You'll hear from us in 2 weeks. I mean, maybe we'll hear from you as well.
Yeah, one hopes.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks so much for joining us on the Slowpokes, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, bye.